Welcome to the Samuel Leeds podcast. My name's Russell Leeds, and on this week's show, we're going to be looking at some exclusive insights that Samuel's never talked about before, his childhood, and some challenges that he's facing right now.
Hey, Samuel, how you doing, bro?
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Question for you, I wanted to start with. You became successful in property at 17.
And I don't know if I'd say it depends on that. Go on.
Well, okay, you started in property at 17.
Yes.
And that sounds like, to anyone sort of listening, unbelievably young. Like, you know, most people think of what they're doing at 17, they're smoking in a bus shelter, chatting to their mates. How did that come about?
Well, I wasn't successful at 17. I bought my first house at 17. I guess it depends how you define success.
I would say most people would define a 17-year-old buying a property as a success.
How did it come about? Firstly, I got the information on how to do it. Secondly, I was naive enough to actually believe that it was possible. Do you know what I mean, though?
I do know what you mean.
Because when you're older, you become more cynical. And in around about 2008, 2009, which is when I got started, you could buy houses and refinance them the same day. Like, everyone was buying. So people were buying hundreds of houses back then.
Mm.
Just hundreds. Basically, the bank were just financing everything. And I thought, well, I can do that. The only thing that was stopping me was the fact that I couldn't get a mortgage.
So do you think that, like, today it's a lot more difficult to get started as a 17-year-old as it was back when you started?
No, I don't. Because now I think there's other things that you can do. I think it's just different. I think now you can do, like now, for instance, you can do rent-to-rents.
Mm.
And you can do deal packaging and joint ventures. And, like, I think it's just different.
Talk to me about what you mean by being naive. I kind of know what you mean, but you mean you were so naive that actually worked in your favour?
Yes.
What? Explain.
I think that people say that you don't know what you're doing because you've not lived, you've not experienced. But in one sense, that's an advantage because you're going to be foolish enough to give it a go. And when you give things a go, sometimes they happen. And if you're prepared to do whatever it takes and keep going, eventually it will work. So, and people, you know, people sort of say, oh, it's just a dream. It's a pipe dream. Like, what does a pipe dream mean? Surely every entrepreneur has to start with a dream. So how can, you're just dreaming. No, that's a good thing. Start with a dream, a naive, stupid, unrealistic dream. Turn that into a goal, turn that into a business plan, and then take action.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what was your dream then? So 17. When did the dream happen when you were 16? I can't remember the exact time.
It's a really funny one. Okay, so when I was 17, the dream sort of happened, and it depends what you mean by the dream. So I always felt like I wanted to be significant. I wanted to impact people. I had like something in my belly that burned where I didn't want to live like a normal average life.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in one sense that's the dream. I then thought property could be a good vehicle after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, and then I went to a property event, and I went to a property event, and I met Simon Zushi, stepdad, stepdad Tim, who was also getting into property, and he was looking at accountancy backgrounds, and now said, I want to start doing properties, and he was refinancing his personal house to buy properties, and I just thought, I want this, and I just really, really badly wanted a house. I think so. The dream for me to begin with was just to get a house.
I want to buy a house.
I want a house. I want to be a homeowner. At the moment, I'm just a kid, and all my friends are thinking about getting a car. All my friends are thinking about, you know, who they're going to go on a next date with. I want a house. I want to own a house, and I want to rent it out. And I want to be a landlord. That was a dream.
Yeah,
that was my first dream. And then when I did that, then I thought, right, now I want more. So my dream was to get a house, and I did it at 17 years old. Funny thing is that I always knew that I was going to have to be 18 to buy a house, because you can't buy a house unless you're 18. So I was, when I was 17, I had the dream, and I was thinking, when I'm 18, and then a mortgage broker told me that you've got to be 21 to get a buy-to-let mortgage. So suddenly I'm like, oh man, and I've spent all my life savings on going on property courses and stuff, and suddenly I thought, oh man. 4 years, like, suddenly it felt like a lifetime away. But then when I realised that I could actually do it when I'm 18 by putting it in someone else's name, I thought, well, holy cow.
If I can do it when I'm 18.
I can do it now.
Yeah.
So it went from a bad thing into something that was actually really liberating. It was like a week or two before my 18th birthday.
Interesting though that like so something happened that hit you back, but then finding the loophole was actually better than if you'd had to. Well, 2 weeks better, I suppose, but I had to wait in the first place.
Yeah, but it's turning a bad into a good. It's flipping the cards.
Yeah.
Which is what you, me and you constantly do.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well that you put your life saving. I mean, not many 17-year-olds have life savings.
Yeah.
So how did that come about? Because we were talking about this the other day, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. All successful people that I know now, yourself, James Caan. Whenever I seem to interview someone or read a biography of someone, certainly in the UK, when they were a kid, they all had paper rounds. And they all played Monopoly.
Yeah.
It seems to be just... And I'm not saying if you didn't play Monopoly as a kid or have a paper round, you're doomed.
That's it, you're screwed. No more opportunity.
But if you did play Monopoly and you did have a paper round, you're probably going to be super successful. Unless someone steals your dream. So, I had paper rounds, man. We both did. We had paper rounds.
We did. And you used to like, you know, you were the kid, I remember at school, who would like buy magic tricks from dad.
From his market stall.
From his market stall, but get them like at the wholesale price.
Yep.
And then learn the trick, go to school,
yep.
Show people the trick, and then sell it them for like, you know,
yeah.
The RRP and make a pretty decent profit.
Make the profit that my dad would make when he was selling it to people. I'd be doing that while I was at school in my breaks and stuff. And they thought I was selling drugs. And my bank manager thought I was selling drugs.
Because we both had an account at Bradford and Bingley, didn't we?
Yep.
little savings account. We used to take our paper money and stuff and
I used to iron my money. I used to iron it. Look at it, smell it, iron it.
That's a bit weird.
And then take it to the bank.
I didn't used to do that. I used to just... Why iron it? And then take it to the bank? Doesn't make any
sense.
Because
I just wanted it in my hands, crisp and nice and clean, to look at it, to respect it. Because if you disrespect money, it won't hang around very long.
The first time we did it, were you worried about burning a hole in it?
No.
Can you imagine? Oh.
No, that never happened.
So then you just got, how much money did you have saved?
So when I left school, I had just over six grand. But that wasn't just from paper rounds. It wasn't just from magic tricks. It was also from, I mean, okay. I kind of, as an entrepreneur, as a teenage school entrepreneur, I slowly advanced. So I started off washing cars and cutting lawns.
We did that though when we were like 10.
Yeah.
Didn't we used to go around.
But I didn't go hard into wanting to make money and iron money until I was 14. But yeah, we did.
I can remember like when we like going nuts to people's. I remember stories now, and back then I thought they were nuts. But now I look back and I don't know why. So I'd go knock on the door. I'd say, "Oh, would you like your car washed? You know, £5." And they'd be like, "Tell you what, I'll give you £1 just to wash the wheel hubs." And I was like, "Sucker!" But obviously they were just giving it me.
Yeah, because for you it's easy. You're like, "Oh, that's so much." But they just wanted you off their back. They didn't want you to scratch the car. They pitied you, and they gave you £1. Basically, yeah.
But we spent our Saturdays doing that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Washing cars. I remember ruining someone's lawn, cutting their lawn.
I remember when you ruined that lawn. And every time we'd walk back from school, we'd have to walk back to the house. And you'd be like, looking at the floor, walking really fast.
I hope they didn't recognise me.
But you were trying. You were having a bash. And I think, so I went from washing cars and cutting lawns, even cutting mom's lawn, because we didn't get pocket money.
We didn't get pocket
money. We had to work for money, right?
So one of the cool things that we had as well, is we used to have to buy our own clothes. We used to have all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We used to have to do jobs to earn.
And I didn't used to buy clothes. I used to get hand-me-downs from you or Uncle Gareth or whoever. And then the money that I had that I'd worked for my clothes allowance, I used to save.
Because I was really bothered. You had more money than me saved. Because I was really bothered about having designer clothes and stuff like that. But you, one of the things that I always remember about you and obviously growing up is you did not give a crap what anyone thought about you. Whether it be a teacher, whether it be any of the other kids at school, your friend, no one, you just didn't care. How do you think that served you in business and in property and life?
Because it's the same today.
You're definitely the same today, for sure. One of the things that you know I know about, anyone that around you knows about you. Why is that?
Okay, the definition of integrity is doing what you would do in private is the same as what you do in public. I am who I am, and I'm the same everywhere. I mean, within reason. Of course, sometimes there's context and things like that. But generally speaking, I am just completely who I am. And I don't mind what people think about me. I don't know why. As you say, I was like it when I was a kid. I know who I am. And I love who I am. And if someone else doesn't like me, maybe they're valid reasons to not like me. Maybe I'm a prick, you know, at times. But if someone doesn't like me, at least I know who I am and I'm content in who I am. So it just doesn't bother me. And I think actually in business, you need to be like that. So I think it served me really well.
You say you need to be like that, but I don't know anyone else. I mean, there's always people to a degree. Everyone always says, you know, like, oh, I don't give an F or whatever. But I always think when anyone says that, it's because they do.
Yeah. For people go around going, I don't care what you think of me. They always do.
They always do care. If anyone ever makes a big deal of it, it's because they care.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, you know, they know, you know, we shouldn't care how people think. But I don't know anyone. I was talking about this. A few of us went for a business meeting and you came up in conversation. And we were saying, you know, we all think we don't really care what people think about us. But compared to Samuel, we do.
Yeah.
It's weird. Go on, tell me how you think it served you then in business. Because it is strange. Yeah. Most people care what other people think.
Yeah. And it's not that I don't care how other people feel. So if I mean, this has happened recently. You know, I've said something and you've been a little bit offended. And I care about that. I care that I've offended somebody because I don't want to be the cause of anyone's pain. Okay, so I do care on that level. You know, if I say something, if I'm sharp with Amanda, my wife, and she's upset about it, oh, and she's hurt, I care. I care about that. What I don't care is...
You don't care looking stupid. You don't care. You don't care standing out from the crowd. You don't care people thinking that you're ignorant or that sort of stuff.
Or being misunderstood or people saying, you did this. No. So how's it served me? Because I guess especially when you're in business, if you've got lots of tenants and you've got lots of, as a trainer, students, and you've got lots of customers and lots of people that are seeing you, or you're putting YouTube videos, I've got lots of people that see your videos. The bigger you grow, the more opinions are going to happen. And if you get offended or if you care really badly or you can't sleep because someone doesn't like you, and you're never going to please everybody 100% of the time, ever. It's funny because the same, sometimes, okay, I've got a property at the moment in Birmingham, it's a HMO. That property's had the same tenants in, the same group, for about 4.5 years. And pretty much the same people paying the same rent, same story. Rents have gone up a lot in the last 4 years in Birmingham, a lot. So some of them are paying like 20, 30, 40% less than what they should be paying. However, the property, because they've been living there for ages, the property's got general wear and tear, the carpets are a bit mucky, the kitchen probably needs changing and stuff like that. So I decided that what we would do is we would spend £10,000 refurbishing the house. We'll get a new kitchen, new bathroom, new carpets, paint it and really go to town on it. In fact, it might have even been more than 10 grand. But then what we'd do is we'd put the rents up a little bit. And we told all the tenants, hey everybody, this is what we're doing. We're going to be adding value to the house, lifting it up. It's going to be beautiful, and the rents are going to go up a little bit. But the rents were still below the average price. Okay, so it's going up a little bit. Some of the tenants were like, "Thank you so much. We really appreciate you looking after the house. Of course, we're happy to pay a little bit more rent, and thank you for refurbishing. I know it's been this such a long time." And some of them were furious and saying, how dare you put the rents up? No, I don't want you to do a new kitchen. I like it the way it is. I'm really annoyed. So the same thing.
Same news.
Yeah. Some people think it's brilliant and some people think it's awful. The same people in the same house with the same situation. Some people think I'm horrible. And oh, what a terrible. How dare he do that? I don't want a new kitchen. And then other people are like, oh, wow, thank you. You didn't have to do that. So, and I think that's a small example, but on a much bigger scale, when you're a businessman and when you're an impactor and an influencer, you're going to have some people that are really upset with you. And I think if you lose sleep over it, you just need to think, is what I'm doing reasonable? Is what I'm doing fair? Am I doing this with a good heart and good intent? You know, is it ethical, legal, moral? And am I generally trying to help people and add value? And if the answer to all those things is yes, 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 then I think it served me not wasting time and energy over people being upset with me. Because some people just like, even when I broke my leg and I was in Africa, dying, lost 25% of my blood, and the doctors had just told me, you won't walk ever again. Bad place. Lying in my own urine, because the nurses, you know, it's different. Not eaten for days, because they say, no, unless you've got family. Like, bad place. People were mocking me online in the UK. People were saying, oh, I bet it's a marketing stunt. Like, yeah. And I don't care. I don't even, do you know what I mean? So I think that served me well, because some people will be really crushed by that.
They would. Some people would be. They'd be really offended, annoyed, angry.
Yeah, and then it would eat them up, bitter. And then they'd become bitter. You know, so that's I think that's why it served me. And as an influencer as well, which I am now, in the property space, I say, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. So I think it has served me.
Yeah. You also mentioned belief, you know, talking about it being naive. And one of the things that, again, a lot of people say about you, people that know you, and me as well, to be fair, but they say you've got like an unbelievable belief in yourself, in what you're doing. Mm. You're very confident you're going to succeed no matter what the circumstances. And then you mentioned that you were almost part because you were naive enough to believe it. Do you think believing that you can do something plays a major role, 80% of the way there? How much of a role do you think? Yeah,
I think it plays a massive role. Who was it? Was it Steve Jobs who said,
"People." Henry
Ford. If you think you can, you can't. You're right. But no.
Yeah, go on.
Even better quote. Steve Jobs. He said, "The people that are crazy enough to believe that they can change the world are usually the ones that actually do." And I think that's such a powerful quote because it is crazy to think. I genuinely believe that with the philanthropy work and the education and the inspiration and the videos that we put out there, I genuinely believe that it's changing the world. I believe that when I leave this world, I'll leave it a better place. Now, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. But I genuinely believe that. And some people might say, oh, that's ridiculous. You're not making the world a better place.
There are 7 billion people.
Yeah, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
You know, how arrogant. But I believe that. And I think having an absolute faith and belief, and here's what I think. I think if something's possible, then I can do it. That's very much how I live my life. So if someone's done something before, then I can do it too. As long as I'm prepared to put in the work that they put in and follow the steps and get the training and put in the persistence and the hard work. So, and it's a bit like, you know, the 4-minute mile.
Hmm.
The 4-minute, who was it that broke the 4-minute mile?
Roger someone.
Roger Bannister? Anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it was. When he broke the 4-minute mile, what happened was very quickly, and it'd been years.
Everyone said,
oh, you can't. They said if you ran a mile in less than 4 minutes, you'd physically die. It is impossible. The human body cannot do that. And that's what, you can't. And then when Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, what happened was suddenly loads of people did it. That can only be belief. It can only be belief. So I'm not doing things. I'm not breaking records, unfortunately. I'm not a record breaker, as far as I'm aware. But what I do is I find people who are way more successful than me. And I say, well, look, I'm going to stand on the shoulder of giants. If they've done it, it's possible.
Mm.
So what did they do? They must know something I don't. I'm going to learn that. And then I'll go to town and make it happen.
How much of it do you think is possible for everyone then? Because I believe it is. There's a very interesting book called Bounce,
mm-hmm.
which talks about that it's the myth of talent. So in our society, we're very much programmed to believe, oh, it's because they're just naturally good at that. It's very much the luck of the draw. Either you've got it or you haven't. And I don't believe that to be the case. I believe that there is a degree of natural talent, but it pretty much is all down to, anyone can pretty much do anything they want to do. It's all down to hard work, dedication. I had a few arguments though with successful entrepreneurs who disagree with me. No, you're born an entrepreneur. No, you're that way. I don't think that. Tell me your opinion on that.
Okay, so I think it's complex. I don't think it's black or white. If I said I want to be the tallest man in the world, unfortunately, I'm born 6 foot. I can't be 7 foot. If I said I want to be, the best. The best basketball player because of certain physical, you know, I think there are some things that you can't necessarily,
because you're not tall enough to be a good basketball player,
right,
for example.
Right. Not that I'm making myself feel really short now.
You
I'm
are.
6 foot, but I think there's
almost, yeah, almost.
So I think there's some things. Or if I say I want to be a supermodel, well, you know, so there's some things.
Mind you were talking about, we were saying this thing about Lou, yes. Walsh. Go on, tell us that. About being
about Louis Walsh.
Yeah, yeah.
So Louis Walsh, of course, if you're signing someone to be an artist, a pop star, they need to be attractive.
Yeah.
But Louis Walsh signs people where Simon Cowell, but like, but they're ugly. And Louis says, nah, no one's really ugly. Anyone can scrub up and look pretty decent. If you're slim and you do your hair right, and
you got the right makeup on,
and you're fashionable, unless you're born absolutely atrociously, or you know, and I'm not meaning to be cruel or anything, but unless you're born with like really severe problems appearance wise, you can scrub up and look good. So I guess you're right. Even from an appearance point of view, if you make an effort and you really want to be good looking, and you think I'm not good looking, you can probably be good looking.
Yeah,
that's true. So okay, so my disclaimer is there are exceptions. You can't push it down to the grey.
Yeah,
but I think that I agree with you. I think that you can be whatever you want, because there's I know it talks about this in Bounce. There's like people where they say, right, my kid is going to be a champion chess player.
Yeah,
and then they are. And there's villages where all the tennis champions are from the same village.
Yeah.
It's not that they're just born tennis champions. It's just that they happen to have played loads.
Table tennis, that was, but yeah.
Oh, table tennis. So I think you can. And I also think it's a much more... Sometimes you have to forget what's true and you have to say what serves me better, what's going to empower me better. And to say, I'm just born how I'm born and I'm good at what I'm good at,
it takes away all the power.
Yeah. It's much better to say, you know what? I can be whatever I want to be. I just need to... practice.
It's the same as taking responsibility.
Yeah.
By saying, oh, I'm naturally... I saw someone say the other day, in all seriousness, they were fat because their mom smoked when they were a baby.
It's just ridiculous.
Pushing away responsibility on your... you know, pushing it onto
your mom.
But
that's what people do right now. People take...
People do it all the time.
I'm born this way. I don't believe... Listen, you cannot use I'm born this way as an excuse for anything. I just don't think you can. Do you want to... How do you want to be? Because you have a choice. Listen, I mean, I'm not judging anyone. If you're happy how you are, then great. But don't moan and say it's because I was born that way.
No.
You know. Like, what about, I don't know if you've heard the story of the guy, two guys, in fact, who grew up together. One guy was really successful, really rich, really happy, really nice, happy family, loving husband. The other guy was a loser, bum, beat his wife, no money. And they interviewed these guys. And I said to the bad guy, why are you such a bum? Why do you beat your wife? Why are you an alcoholic? Why? Because my dad's that way. All right, fine. Then they asked the other guy, why are you so successful and happy and you know, rich and loving? Oh, it was because my dad was a bum who beat my mom. And I didn't want to be that way. Same situation. Same circumstances. But they both had a choice. So... I'm generally speaking, and of course there's exceptions and things can happen, but generally speaking, I think that life is 90% what you make it and 10% how you take it.
Hmm. I agree. How much of that 10% do you think is what you attract?
How do you mean?
So for example, you say 10% is what, so 10% is kind of what happens to you, but 90% of it is how you react to that.
No.
Yeah, okay, go on, explain that.
All right. Your life.
Yeah.
Your life right now,
yeah.
Your business, everything that's happened to you, who you are as a person, is 90% how you've created that, you've made that.
So what's the 10%?
The 10% is how you react to things that aren't in your
control. That's what I'm saying, right?
Well, so if you get hit by a car and you break your legs, or you end up in the hospital, and, right, that can happen and it can be, oh my goodness. Now to say, oh, well, it's your fault, you've got to take responsibility, you got hit by a car, it's your fault. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe
my question is, right, I wasn't saying what you were saying. 10%, right, is what happens to you. And then 90% is how you react to that and how your mindset.
No,
is
90% isn't what happens to you. 90%.
No, other way around. 10% is what happens to you. 90% is how you react.
Yeah, but you still have a choice on how you respond to the 10%.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. But my question is like law of attraction, all that teaches that the 10% you have control over as well. Because you attract the things that happen to you.
You do not have 100% control in your life.
So you think about 10% is fair?
No, you have 90% control.
Okay. This is very confusing, but I get the overall point.
Hopefully the listeners will be able to understand both of us and we'll just want to explain it in a way that we both understand.
I think I understand you, I think, but it's fine. It's fine. Let's just move on from that.
But okay, we both agree. You take responsibility for your life. You create your own life. You create your own brand. I don't say... So it's funny because I even make decisions about stuff like, do I want to be a person who swears? It's not just, do you swear? No. Do you want to be a person that swears? Maybe you do. Maybe you want to swear. Maybe you want to be someone that swears just occasionally, for emphasis. Maybe you don't want to swear, but you have control over that. Don't just say, oh, it's just the way I am.
Oh, there's around people that swear, so I swear.
I'm just born this way. No, you're not born that way. I could say, I'm just born, I hit people, I punch people in the face that annoy me. I'm born that way. No. Be an adult and take responsibility. You can't say you're born that. You might be born wanting to do that, but take control and live your life how you want to live. You create the person that you are.
So what would, are there any things then that you've got going on in your life that you want, but maybe you don't want bad enough to actually make it happen, or that you want to take control of but haven't been able to?
I think my biggest of the areas of life, so you've got spiritual, you've got relationships, you've got recreational, i.e. interest, hobbies, fun, you've got business, finance, of all the things, the thing that I have struggled with that I haven't quite got to grips with, annoyingly, is my health. And you know, and that is the, it's probably for, do you know what I think it is? I think it's a good thing, because I think me not being quite as healthy as I want, and not being and struggling a little bit, because you know, and I'm about to give excuses. I'm not going to do that. It's because I'm born that way, man. I'm born overweight. No.
It's your environment.
It's my environment. No, but I think it probably gives me more empathy for people that struggle with their wealth and finances. So I think if I had a ripped six pack, oh my goodness, I would have it all.
Keeps you humble.
You know, so having a slight weakness and being like, oh man, I struggle with this. Why can't I get it together? Then when I'm talking and I'm coaching people who are saying, oh man, I'm struggling with my finances. Why can't I get it together? It forces me to have a little more empathy. Otherwise, it'd be very easy for me to just be like, what's
well,
the
look
problem?
At me. I'm perfect.
Yeah, man, I'm perfect. I've got it together. I've got... Whereas I'm like, I can... So it helps me relate to people that are struggling a little bit more. So I'm turning a bad into a good here when really I should just get ripped.
Are you going to get ripped?
Mate, don't ask me, because then I'm going to have to commit to it.
Are you going
to
get ripped?
I'm going to get richer. I'm going to impact more people. Am I going to get ripped? I don't know, mate. Ask me next year.
You'll say the same thing.
Lot of effort. Big sacrifice. Everything's a sacrifice, but it's always worth it in the long run.
If it's important to you. I mean, that's
people say to me all the time, they say, Samuel, I've got an idea. I'll teach you how to get ripped, and you teach me how to get wealthy. And we can just do, you know, fair trade. I'm thinking, in principle, that sounds awesome, but here's the thing. How much do you charge per hour, one-on-one, to teach someone how to get healthy? £100 an hour. Right, I charge £10,000 for an hour, one-on-one. So it's like, it's a difficult one. How about I'll just pay you? And they're like, all right, cool. And then I'll pay them up front for 6 months, and then I won't go.
It's funny. It's a hard one, that is. I don't know why. I'm the same, man. I'm the same. I do little bits, but... I don't know.
Biggest thing is putting time aside to have gratitude. I think being grateful is the biggest asset.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
If you're an ungrateful person, you even if you're rich financially and you have a good business and stuff, you just stink. Entitled, ungrateful, proud, arrogant. And there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. And people sometimes, I think, misunderstand me as arrogant. But I think arrogance and entitlement stinks. And no one's self-made. Arnold Schwarzenegger said this. When we had a VIP dinner thing, he said this. Because he is the definition of what people mean when they say self-made. Literally, came from nothing, no money, had lots of things against him. Went to America on his own. Couldn't speak the language very well. You know, literally nothing going for him.
Just even his name. That was a big thing, wasn't
it? Yeah, Schwarzenegger's hard to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, literally, you wouldn't back that horse. If you're a gambling man, you wouldn't put money on he was going to be the governor of California, one of the most famous and respected Hollywood movie stars, extremely wealthy property portfolio. In fact, property was what made him financially free before he pursued Hollywood. You know, so he is the definition of what people say self-made. First thing he'll say when you talk to him about how he's done what he's done is he'll say, no one's self-made. I'm here because of the people that supported me, believed in me, the mentors, the trainers, which I just think is a fabulous attitude.
Yeah.
And I'll try and imitate that a little bit. I don't think I'm as humble as Arnold. But there's a...
So do you think you should be more humble?
Mate, you should always be more humble. You can never be too humble. And it's a good thing. Sometimes people think, I'm the boss, I'm the owner, I can't be seen cleaning floors and stuff. It's not a good look, it's against my brand, it's a bad positioning. It's really not, because if you won't pick up the, if you won't stack the chairs when you've got an event, if you won't, and it's not to say, okay, there's value in your time, it's good to value your time, but if you're not prepared to do that ever, if you're just like, ugh, I wouldn't do that in principle, it's beneath me, then don't expect anyone else to do that. So I think it's important.
Yeah, I agree. So what would you say right now, biggest new lessons that you've had or anything going on in your life that's interesting that you think would be of value to anyone?
Okay, you know when you do something last minute and you're forced to suddenly do it at the last minute?
I can very much relate to that, yes.
Right. I am at the moment, recently I've been interviewing some really cool people. Like tomorrow I'm interviewing James Kahn, should be really cool. And I've been interviewing some really cool people. Like Dr. John D. Martini.
Yeah.
And I've been interviewed by some really cool people like Russell Leeds. Now, but when you're interviewing someone, you've got to research them beforehand. And I think studying some of these guys, like I've just read James Kahn's autobiography. I might have read it years ago, I don't know.
It's different when you read it when you're meeting them, though. You're going
to be sat down with someone, talking about property and different things, but also interviewing them for the YouTube channel, forces you to really research them deep as you can. And get questions and think, right, what would I want to know from this person? And how could... And I've learned so much doing that. I've just read James Kahn's... I've read his biography, but I also read... I've read one of his books called How to Start a Business in 7 Days, which is okay. His biography was amazing. But I was reading it, I was just thinking, man. And I think if I'd have read the book a year ago, I don't think it would have had the same impact. And sometimes I'll reread books and it'll be like I've read a completely different book because I'm at a different season in my life. So talking about one of the big things, I think it's studying successful people and studying them again and again and again. So because you relate to different things. So James Kahn talks about his whole life as an entrepreneur. He talks right from a teenager up until like when he wrote the book. And I'll relate most to the bit where he's talking about successful business, but now taking things to a whole new level and some of the growing pains and the staff and finding good people. And I'm like, that's where I am. So in that section of the book, I'm like, wow. And I'm reading it and I'm loving it. But probably a couple of years ago, if I'd have read it, I'd have read...
You'd be related to when he was a teenager.
Yeah, or just inspired to when he was on the mountain as a dragon. So it's just, I think it's fabulous. Studying successful people. And also as well, remembering that there's not necessarily always a right and a wrong way to do business. Sometimes
I very much agree with that. I remember when the first few business books and stuff I read, it was like, you do it this way, you do it that way. And then when you start reading other books, it's like, hold on,
who's right?
Yeah, who's right? One of them's got to be right.
Yeah.
And because at school, when you, it's black and white, isn't it?
Yes.
You read, you know, you do maths paper, it's this or that. You read the English paper, they're looking for this answer.
Yes. So what works for someone else might not work for you.
Yeah.
Here's the thing: be a student of many and a follower of none. So, I even say this to some of my students. See, I call them students. I don't want followers, I want students. I want people to learn from me and grow from me, but not just me. And find other people and have someone to train you physically or relationally or different types of business and aspects. And it's not about who's right or who's wrong. It's about, you could read Lord Sugar's biography and you could read Richard Branson's biography and go, well, who's right? Well, Branson. Neither of them are right. Oh. Normally what I do is I look at who's richer and then I'll say that person's right. But sometimes, and that is not a bad rule of thumb sometimes. It depends. If you're wanting to learn about finance and business, who's richer? Because it's like, and I'll say this to my students.
Health, who's healthier?
Right. When you out-earn me, then fine, you can argue. But listen, man, because I get people trying to argue with me about how to run a business or how to invest in property or whatever. And they're not doing it. It's like, what, you watched 3 shows of The Apprentice and now you're trying to tell me how to run my business? You're telling me how to invest in my, how to do the castle and how to renovate and how I'm doing it all wrong when you've done what? Mm. Oh, you refurbed your own kitchen. You painted your mum's doorway. Oh, right. Thanks for your advice, mate. I'm not interested.
I read a quote somewhere. Most people, I can't remember who it was, but it was something like, most people are unsuccessful because they take advice from their neighbour and family.
Yeah. Listen, I am very coachable. You know, you've seen me with people. Like, I'm sat around a table like this with Lord Sugar. He's giving me advice.
I think it's important. You're always learning, always reading, always growing.
I love being... I'm like... When what was I like when we sat with Grant Cardone? He's earning more money than me. And in this context right now, I'm the mentee. I'm the learner. So I'm like, teach me. Mm. What am I doing wrong? How can I grow?
Yeah, yeah,
right?
You are. You're
but
very much like
I'm
that.
Very coachable, but then sometimes, and I won't shoot people down, but you got to, if I listen to every piece of advice, you know, and most people's advice, if you got to look at them. So if someone says to you, oh, don't do that, it's risky. Okay, well, what have you done? Okay, you're working in a job you don't like. You've got a miserable marriage. Like, no offense. I don't want to take advice from you. And you don't even have to say that. You can just think it and say thank you for sharing and walk on.
Someone said something of like a little bit like that on one of the. I saw someone did a video saying no money down deals are not possible.
Yeah.
And they were like, no. And someone went, oh, very interesting point of view. Not what Samuel Leeds says. And then someone else went on and said, yeah, but does this guy own his own castle? And it's right. Like, so he's like saying, oh, no money downs are not possible. But like, he's not successful himself. So yeah, for him, you know, they're probably not.
Yeah, they're not possible for him. He's right. Anyone that says something's not possible is speaking from a poverty mindset, because everything is possible. You know, like, within reason, you can take things out of context. But why go around talking about what's not possible? Why not find solutions for what is possible? You know, so anyone that's saying you can't do that, that's not possible, that's risky, that's for me, that's coming from a broke mindset. I'd rather, the way you're going about doing that isn't going to work. It's possible, but let me show you the better route. That I'll listen to. But someone just says you can't do it. It's just to me, it's boring. I'm not interested. I've been told that all my life. You know, it's like when people tell you that you can't. Or even, let's put a different slant on it. Like when people say, it's all right for you, you're happy now because you're 20 years old and you're single, and that's why you're so happy and have so much energy. Wait until you're in a relationship. Everything changes. And then you get in a relationship and life's still great and you're still happy and you've still got loads of energy.
Wait 5 years.
Oh, you wait until you're married. You wait until you have kids. Oh, you wait until you have your second kid. You wait until they're... And in the end, it's like, life is still fantastic, actually. Are you just prophesying your life on me? I think that's probably what this is about. Because you keep saying, wait until, wait until, wait until, wait until. Like, what's next? Oh, wait until they leave home, then you'll be depressed. Stop waiting for me to be depressed. Stop waiting for me to fail. And you become successful and stop prophesying your shit over my life. You know, that's... And I don't listen to it.
No, I know.
And I'll shoot them down.
You do. I've seen people... I remember when you were in a relationship with Amanda and people were saying, oh, wait till you get married. I remember you being really angry
I'm
about
very
it.
Hardcore with them. And sometimes I'm probably too sensitive towards it because I'm just like... Awesome. And because sometimes it's culture. Sometimes it's just people say things they don't mean. It's because it's the cool thing to say. Oh, wait until this age. And I'll just... And then they're like, whoa, he took that badly.
I remember you telling me, you might not remember, but I think you told me an interesting story about something. You went for a business meal.
Yeah. I don't remember what I said.
Do you remember the story-ish?
Yes.
If you can't think, I can't think either.
It was a similar thing where someone was prophesying nasty stuff over me. In a culturally acceptable way. Because in England, it's okay to be miserable.
Well, it's expected.
Moan about the weather. Moan about the government. Moan about... Same sort of thing, yeah. And I'm just not interested.
No negativity.
No negativity. And that's not, and people say, you know, oh, just, no, but you need to be a realist. Listen, when I need to be pessimistic, I'm pessimistic. When I'm doing a deal, I'll look at the worst case of the deal. Okay, so that's just called me doing good due diligence and risk assessing things.
Mm.
But in my life, generally, oh, big picture stuff of doom and gloom, I can't stand it.
No.
I'm addicted to success. I'm addicted to positivity, and I'm completely allergic to negativity. And some people are allergic to money, and they'll sabotage it. Whereas I'm the opposite. I'll sabotage negativity And I'm addicted to getting more money and more success and helping more people.
I agree with everything you just said. Well put. So talking about growing and learning, what right now, you know, you mentioned earlier about how you're like, oh, you know, you don't choose not to swear, for example. If you're learning, I mean, you do choose, sorry, not to swear.
I didn't say I did, that was an example, but yeah.
But what right now in your life, maybe since moving to London, are you trying to implement in the business or in your personal life in order to grow and improve?
Oh, man, I don't know, mate. It's a really good question. I guess, so it'd be interesting your take on this because you probably know the answers about me more than I know about me. So with the business, I got it to a point, you became CEO, we became business partners, we took on Sarah's COO, we got some really good stuff and people like that. And I then was like, right, I'm now going to step right back and I'm just going to be a bit more passive and hands off and I'm going to, you know, kind of just focus on, the, you know, whatever. And that was, it was very kind of relaxed, passive.
Training, basically.
Yeah, doing training.
Whether that be
doing marketing videos, you know, going out, just traveling, whatever it might be, okay? So I'm not saying doing nothing or adding no value, but just not involved in the everyday stuff. And then I think now I disagree with that a little bit because I'm looking at some of these guys like Lord Sugar, for instance. Lord Sugar still goes to the office and gets hands-on and stuff. So I replaced myself and stepped out of the business and now I'm beginning to step back into it a little bit. Why? Number one, I love it, but number two is I think it adds value.
I do. Do you know what I think? I think that it's important that you've replaced yourself to a point where you're not needed. You can go and train and stuff for a month.
I can travel for a month for no.
It doesn't matter. However, as you enjoy working, it makes sense that you're here because you can help us grow and plan and all that sort of stuff. So yeah,
and training the staff. Like yesterday, I spent a few hours with the marketing team talking about vision and how to stand out and like a whole bunch of stuff. And it was just so cool. And I know they loved it as well. But and the same with some of the training advisors, customer service. And I really enjoy training the staff, being part of it, you know. Yeah. And I think so that's kind of my focus at the moment.
Being a
part of it, helping recruit good people, being around. And
that's what I thought you were going to say. When I asked the question in my mind, I was thinking, I know well, one of the things we've been talking about, this is actually one of the things that we learned from Robert Kiyosaki. The biggest takeaway I had when we met with Robert Kiyosaki was everything you'd ask him, he'd have someone that did that for, like a tax expert, a this. And I thought, man, he's just literally just surrounded himself with brilliant lawyers, accountants, tax experts, the developers. So, like, one of the things that we've done is brought someone in to help us find deals.
Yeah, like
example.
An absolute expert in commercial property and development.
Yeah. So, and I think I feel like that's probably the biggest thing that we've been working on over the last, well, ever, when we spoke about Robert Kiyosaki, and it was like flipping it.
Yeah.
He was brilliant at that. So, I don't know
just
when that was.
Just getting expert people
around
and,
you.
And also, I think as well, we used to think very much down the lines of create extraordinary systems and then get average people to run those extraordinary systems. And I think we've moved away from that a bit now. I think, no, you do need extraordinary people. You really do.
I think so.
And extraordinary systems are fantastic. But and also, you can, I used to look at companies like McDonald's and think, this business has got really average people serving the chips and running it. But it's just got such good systems.
That's true.
Right, but no, it is to a point. But here's what you forget. Yeah, that's what you see when you go to McDonald's. But the people that really run the business, the people that pull the strings and make it happen, the visionaries, I bet they've got the best marketing team, the best solicitors, the best, but you just don't see them serving chips.
Mm.
So, and how many decades has it taken McDonald's to get those systems in place where they can do that? A long time. So rather than trying to be too clever, you know, I just read The E-Myth, you know, like 7 years ago. I'm like, And The E-Myth is a great book. But rather than trying to be too clever, too quick, just get really good people around you.
I agree. And then let them, like, more the Google approach.
And let them create the systems. So I'm trying to give our team more freedom to put the systems in place. And some will step up and some won't. And that's fine. But then at least your people have the opportunity to go far and to go, you know, so rather than doing everything yourself, I am the owner and this person, I'm going to put together all the systems and then find the people. Let them do it.
Mm. A lot of entrepreneurs are control freaks, aren't they?
Control freaks. Let them put together the manuals.
Mm.
And it is hard sometimes. And any company is going to have problems, and that we've dropped the ball as a company, and we've messed up. And because when you give freedom to staff, sometimes they're not going to do it as you would do it. But you've got a choice. You can either be in control of absolutely everything, you can do everything yourself and micromanage, in which case you're probably not going to drop the ball, but you're only going to ever be very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
No, or grow, learn, give freedom.
And if you want to impact more people, if you want to grow a bigger business, you need to be able to grow. You need to get people around you. You need to rely on other people, be a team.
And you need to let go, but still keep responsibility. So let go of having to be in control. But then when it goes good, praise the staff. When it goes bad, take responsibility. That's a true leader.
Well, hey, awesome stuff. Some real gems in there. It's been great interviewing you.
Thanks, bro.